Young core. We like this group of players, and this feels a lot like 13.
It's time for the Neil Huntington Show every Sunday on the Pirates Baseball Network. For all Pirates updates, breaking news and information, as well as chances to win unique prizes, follow the Pirates on Twitter at Pirates, add Pirates to Snapchat, like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Pirates, and on Instagram at Pittsburgh Pirates. Find out more at PittsburghPirates.com/connect. It's the Neil Huntington Show every Sunday on the Pirates Radio Network.
Welcome into the show here on this Sunday afternoon. The Pirates and the Dodgers coming up in just a little bit. Joe Block with Pirates General Manager Neil Huntington. And let's get right to it as the Pirates getting set for the end of this series. And we've seen a lot of changes going on, mostly injury-based because of the pitching staff. But right now trying to figure out what is going on with the pitching. The Pirates are just announcing here that Mitch Keller intended to be the probable starter tomorrow for game two of the doubleheader against the Reds. You've got Kingham, you've got Brawton there to fill out these other spots right now. What is the rationale? What is the thinking? Clint Hurdle even said today to the reporters, there comes a point in time where they, pitchers need to pitch well in order to get opportunities to pitch. Now, Brawl came off a better outing his last time around, but where do you go with this? What are your options? Let folks know, I guess, what the decision-making process is like for you and where everything stands right now.
Well, I think this is yet another reminder that pitching is a game of attrition and you never have enough of it. We talk about it all the time. We felt pretty good about the number of arms and the quality of those arms that we had, not only at the major league level, but as next tier in AAA, and that is being challenged, no question about that. We've lost two of our top starters for extended periods of time. Chris Archer missed a chunk. Now Trevor's down for a while. Jameson's going to be down for a while. And Steve Brault and Nick Kingham have had opportunities to step in. They didn't do it. We went with the opener. And people really are getting twisted on the opener. The opener is really just looking at the first five or six innings of a ball game. And if you think your reliever has a better chance to get one, two, three, four, and five hitters out, somewhere their top five hitters, instead of him pitching the sixth inning when he might or might not be pitching with a tie game, might not be pitching with a lead. He might be pitching in a deficit at that point if your starter doesn't get the job done. So when you feel better about your reliever getting those first three to five hitters out, you pitch the sixth inning in the first inning because you know it's matched up the way you want it. Now, unfortunately, two of the three times our opener hasn't done the job that we need them to do. That doesn't tax our bullpen any more than a starter getting knocked out in the third or fourth or fifth even. So there's a real misunderstanding. It's all we're doing is taking what we think could be the sixth inning of a game, putting it in the first inning of the game, and ensuring ourselves we get the best possible matchups. Now, when your starters are good, you don't need to use an opener. When your starters have struggled and you think your relievers are better, you go with an opener. When your relievers have also struggled, now maybe you go back to conventional. And we've got an opportunity for Nick Kingham and Steven Brault here to step up and to finally grab a hold of jobs and just not give them back. Mitch Keller, as we've talked for about a month now, added a slider. We've always loved the fastball, the curveball, the changeup. The curveball's a hammer. The changeup is progressing to a point where he can get major league hitters out with it. But we added the slider in late April, early May, and we wanted to give him a handful of outings to establish this pitch, not only as a weapon, but also to gain confidence in it and to understand how and when to use it and understand what type of break he's getting. And if we don't have a doubleheader tomorrow, probably not quite there in a perfect world. Well, we are very far from a perfect world. We're in the end of a stretch of another stretch of a lot of games in a very few amount of days. And we need a starting pitcher. And we feel like Mitch, much like Cole Tucker and Brian Reynolds, and Brian Reynolds has come up and thrived. Cole's come up and he's the most wonderful human being you may ever meet in your life. But his struggles offensively have been real, and he's done a nice job for us defensively. So we'll see where Mitch Keller is, and we'll see how he attacks that Cincinnati lineup in game two tomorrow. We're going to need to get some innings out of our starter today. We're going to need to get some innings out of Nick Kingham tomorrow to start that game. We will have a 26th man. We've got Keone Kella somewhere on the horizon. And right now our pitching is a mix-and-match game, and that's the best way I can state it. We've had some guys step up and do a nice job. We've had some guys who need to.
And so now you're talking about who is in the organization, and fans and even one player has come out and would like to have some pitching help. Where does it stand in late May in terms of making trades, acquiring players off waivers, and then, of course, in free agency? And I think everyone, the elephant in the room is Dallas Keuchel, but, of course, Keuchel hasn't signed, and no teams have signed him. And I think a large part of that is at least because of now free agent or draft pick compensation, I should say, comes after the first-year player draft, which is a little over a week away. So it doesn't look like he would sign in the next 10 days or whatever it is. Anyway, so maybe give us the lay of the land with that.
Yeah, with external options, as we did with Chris Stratton, when someone that analytically or scouting-wise or both, in some cases one or the other, when there's someone that comes available that we believe makes us better, we'll make a small trade, a big trade if it makes sense. We'll claim them on waivers. We'll assign them as a minor league free agent. We'll look to see if they have an out clause somewhere pitching in AAA with someone else. The challenge is pitching is really shallow in the game today. There's 120-some pitchers on the major league injured list, so just about every team in baseball is running through questions about how how they're going to fill out the rotation, how they're going to fill out their bullpen. With respect to real trades and meaningful trades, if you look back over the past decade or so, about 3% of trades in baseball, if I'm remembering my math correctly from about a year ago, happen in April and May. The majority happen in July. There's a good chunk of them in June, and then many more trades happen in the offseason. So teams just are not ready to take one of their major league starting pitchers or one of their regulars or one of their core relievers and move them off their club at this point in time, even if they're scuffling. And if they are scuffling and they are willing to engage, you are looking at a dramatic overpay at this point in the season.
So the other thing I wanted to know is with starting pitching, the guys that are going to be – let's say designated for assignment, the guys that you could pluck or at least try to pluck off of waivers at this stage, they're probably inferior to Kingham, Brault, or minor league options. Is that what we're thinking right now?
In
Stratton's case,
yes.
you're able to get a guy that...
Yeah. Chris Stratton...
Long man at the very least, and maybe a starter if he had still been healthy.
Yeah,
Chris
Stratton started 20-plus games last year, has... more starts than Nick Kingham and Stephen Brault do at this point in his career, and it's a shame that he's gone down with some right side soreness, discomfort, and we anticipate this will be a relatively short stay, and we'll get him back out. But he certainly could be an option. He's thrown the ball well since he's joined the organization, and he's gained confidence and feels like he can help us win not only in a multi-inning relief role, but if called upon, a second starter role if we go with the opener, or he could even start some games for us somewhere down the road. We need to get some guys healthy. We need to get some guys right. We'll see where this group takes it. But there are opportunities for young players to step up and keep jobs.
And the other guy would be Francisco Liriano, who has been a starter in the past, was at least an average major league starter or thereabouts. Last year in Detroit, he's pitched excellently out of the bullpen. Clint Hurdle has said, he's reticent to take a guy that's had so much success in a role and try to move him. Is Liriano an option either now or at some point?
We've talked about it. Our goal in spring training was to get Francisco stretched out to 3 and maybe even 4 innings. Unfortunately, if we remember spring training, Francisco had a hard time getting through 2 innings. And so rather than trying to stretch him out and have him continue to struggle, we decided to shorten his outings and see if he could get the ball in the zone more frequently, see if we could get him on the right track, to see if he could be a help for us as a 1-1 plus, maybe 2-inning reliever. And he got on a good track, and he was able to do that. The challenge now is we just can't take Francisco Liriano and go throw him 100 pitches and expect that he's going to have any effectiveness whatsoever, or expect that he's going to recover and be ready to go in 5 days. So there is a sequence of steps that need to get to that point in time, and really even to ask him to go 50 pitches in a start would be quite a task. So it's that double-edged sword with, do you take one of your better relievers out knowing that he's going to give you very short starts, knowing that it's going to take him 5-6 starts to really get to 100 pitches, when you've got Trevor Williams hopefully on the horizon, when you've got Mitch Keller, when you've got Brault who gives you a sign here and there, when you've got Kingham who gives you a sign here and there. It's been an interesting conversation and one that we're working to find the best answer. But to take him out of our bullpen and to the time that it's going to take to stretch him out, and that's assuming he's effective. Even in Detroit last year, you know, not as effective as he's been out of the bullpen for us last year as a starter for Detroit. Just kind of an acceptable starter, but not Francisco Liriano from 2013, 14, and 15 with us.
Yeah, no doubt. He has been, at least in terms of earned run average, the best reliever in the National League so far this year. Trying to figure out the pitching with Neil Huntington here on the Neil Huntington Show. Pirates and Dodgers coming up in a bit. We'll take a break. Lots to talk about here. More to come here after this on the Pirates Baseball Network. Back on the Neil Huntington Show, Pirates and Dodgers coming up in just a bit. And want to talk about Francisco Cervelli. The Pirates making a flurry of roster moves again today. Cervelli being placed on the concussion list. And throughout his career, by my count, and there have been 10 other instances, minor leagues, winter ball, major leagues, where he's either come out of a game or had spent some time on a concussion list or things of that nature. It's such a tricky situation with concussions. The top medical people in the world don't understand it all the way. But baseball has done such a much better job at trying to do it and trying to help players with it. How does that all take place? What goes on behind the scenes in terms of determining the concussion? And is the player ultimately the one who decides, so long as they're symptom-free, to continue playing and how much and things like that? How do you navigate that road? Because I'm sure it's got to be very bumpy.
It is a challenge, and it's something that we've talked internally about. Do we open a discussion with the powers that be at Major League Baseball, with the 29 other general managers, and like other sports, do we create an opportunity for a player who was in an obvious concussion risk situation to come out of the game, to go through an assessment, and then to re-enter the game if he's deemed to be okay? Right now, the challenge we have, Joe, is last night Francisco Cervelli takes the backswing, the bat breaks, the bat hits him in the jaw area of the mask. He goes through an on-field assessment by a trained professional, and everything checks out okay. And so he's allowed to continue in the game, and he comes to hit his next at bat, and he feels lightheaded, he feels dizzy, he feels off. The symptoms come on later, or recognized later, and now he needs to come out of that game, and he's fully out of the game. So there's a lot of pressure on the player to continue to stay in that game, and not just Francisco Cervelli, but every single player, that gets hit in the head with a thrown ball, a player that has a collision on the field. That's an on-field assessment with, last night, ideally, it's 38,000 people looking, but you know, maybe as few as 10,000, but it feels like 100,000 people as that player is trying to go through that assessment. So we're working through, is there a concept, kind of like the NFL when they go into the tent, they go through a professional assessment, and if they're deemed out, then they're deemed out. But if they're deemed to be able to return to the game, then they can come back into the game and you get your backup catcher back, because that would take a ton of the immediacy and the urgency off that assessment. Because right now, if a catcher comes out of the game, he's out of the game. So he feels almost pressure, or a player feels almost pressure.
And almost every team has two catchers.
And almost every team has two catchers. And so now you've taken your starting catcher out. Now you put your backup catcher in. So that's part one of the process, is that on-field assessment. And there is a protocol for the on-field assessment. And if the player is showing any signs, the protocol says to take him out of the game. Once he comes out of the game, he goes through another set of assessments. Some are computer-based and reaction-based. Some are subjective symptoms. Some are objective symptoms with a medical doctor. And you try to get a read from there. And in Francisco's case, we have always tried to err on the side of conservatism and to get him out of the game, to put him on the IL when we think it may be a day or two. We'll lose him for 7 days to make sure that we put him in a position to not sustain another one in a short period of time. Compounding concussions seems to be a much greater issue than just the one shot. So that's where today with Cervelli, probably not going to be down 7 days, but he might be down a lot longer. That's the hardest part, we don't know. And it would be how he recovers and how he feels and how he wants to progress, and then how his objective scores go forward. So the objective scores, when they come back concerning, it's a no-brainer. You put him on the IL and you move on and you make the move and you do everything you can to help him get healthy. When it's a gray area, that becomes a player club collaboration. Does he feel like he needs a few days? Do we feel like we need a day? Do we feel like we need a 7 days? There's been a handful of times we've brought a catcher to Pittsburgh or to wherever we're playing, And it's because we want to see how Francisco is the next day. He comes in, he feels great the next day after taking a ball off the mask and staying in the game, or a ball off the mask and coming out of the game. And so we've brought a catcher, had them not get active because Francisco feels great. We've had situations where the catcher's been activated because Francisco didn't feel good the next day. And again, we always want to take care of the player. The last thing we want to do is look up 20 years from now we didn't do everything we could have done. But there is a protocol. The protocol is stringent. We can't circumvent it. It is what it is, but you could argue that maybe we need to be even more aggressive with protecting a player like Cervelli, who's had a number of these.
Yeah, good food for thought, and hopefully he'll be back and ready to go when he's ready very soon. Some other injury updates, if you will. The guys that are on rehab assignments right now, Corey Dickerson, Keone Kella, and then Jungho Gung is going to leave today, I believe, to start a rehab assignment. Is that right?
He will. He feels great physically and feels like he's ready to go out and start playing in games, and we're going to work to get that bat going. We're going to give him a cluster of at-bats here and do everything we can to get that bat going. Still moving well defensively. It would be a nice addition if we can get that power to play on a more consistent basis. In Keone Kella's situation, he threw an inning in Columbus last night. Not a great inning statistically, but we sent him there to kind of knock the rust off and to see if he felt good, to see how he responds today. And we'll make a decision on what is the next step for him in today and tomorrow. With Corey Dickerson, again, a man that's been down 50-some days from his last major league game, and needs at-bats, needs to go see at-bats, needs to get his timing back. Fortunately, our outfielders have played really well in his absence, so it's not like we're desperate to get Corey back. We can be patient with him. He wants to hit the ground running when he comes back. All too often, guys are pressing to come back, and they end up going 2-for-25, and they hurt the team. But in Corey's case, he understands that he needs to be right. He understands that he's taking the place of somebody playing pretty well. He also understands that he's coming back to face major leaguers that are nearing mid-season form, and he's in raw spring training form. So he's going to get a cluster of at-bats with Indianapolis as well.
All right. That's an update on a few of the injured Pirates right now. The Pirates, who are healthy, are going to take on the Dodgers here in just a little bit. More on the Neil Huntington Show right after this on the Pirates Baseball Network. Back on the Neil Huntington Show, Pirates and Dodgers coming up in just a little bit. Got to talk about Josh Bell. Have you seen anything like this?
You know, Andrew McCutchen, and I'm not comparing Josh Bell to Andrew McCutchen, but Andrew, when he had two or maybe three consecutive months where he either was the player of the month or could have been the player of the month, that's the hottest hitter that I think I've been fortunate enough to be around with the Pirates. Manny Ramirez back in the day with the Indians, it seemed like he could do this for months on end at times. The difference, interestingly enough, between Andrew and Josh is you see the ribbon board here at PNC, or you look at the numbers here, and Josh's numbers look like video game numbers. Andrew always had that little bit of struggle in April, and so by the time he got rolling in May, June, and July, his numbers didn't stand out, and they were great, but they weren't just video game type numbers. And Josh is putting up video game type numbers because he did it out of the gates and the start of the season. To see him do it from left and right side, to see him continue to get big hits, to see him adjust to different pitches and different parts of the zones as pitchers are doing different things to him. Our biggest message to him is he's going to have to take walks, because he's going to have to make sure he's continuing to force these pitchers to come into his damage zones, because when he does, we're seeing what happens.
That was going to be my follow-up, is that we've surmised from up here that's going to start taking place now, the pitching around him whenever the situation dictates, which is a lot. The Pirates have had a lot more base runners here since May has begun. And, you know, that's going to be something that you would think he's probably pretty good at, though, right? That's he's not a real chase guy this year. And when he's been right in past year, I mean, even, you know, good times last year and his rookie season, it doesn't look like he chases all that often, too.
When he's in a good spot, he maintains that discipline in the zone. His biggest strength is his eye-hand coordination is among the best in our organization. I'd put it up against most in the game. It also becomes a detriment because he thinks he can hit anything, and he can. The difference is that ball that's two ball widths off the plate away, even if he barrels it, he's probably going to hit it hard. But when that pitch is on the edge of the plate, that's when he hits it 115 miles an hour or 108 miles an hour, and that's when he can do damage. So there's a difference between getting a hit when a ball's 2 widths off the plate. You're lowering your probability from hitting 340 to 210. So he may still get some hits, but a walk is a walk, and it's a free base 1,000% of the time. So we're going to have to make sure that our guys continue to work around him to protect him. He's going to have to maintain that discipline in the zone, not only to draw walks, but to ensure that he continues to get pitches on which he can do damage.
Yeah, it's been impressive. He has made those adjustments tonight, game number 50 of the season. And sitting at 341 to go with all that power as well. And I looked it up at, not that 350 is, it may be attainable the way that Josh has been hitting, but only Clemente's hit 350 for the Pirates with as many plate appearances as Josh has already in his season since World War II. So it's been pretty amazing to see the batting average go with the power too. That's quite the feat. We'll take 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves here on the Pirates Baseball Network. Got more with Pirates General Manager Neil Huntington right after this here on the Pirates Baseball Network. Back for our final segment here on the Neil Huntington Show. The Pirates and the Dodgers, the final game of this three-game series coming up in a little bit. So we talked earlier about Brian Reynolds, who has been fantastic, picked up in that trade with the Giants before last season, and was brought up to the major leagues because of injuries and probably a little sooner than you would like, but he's been leading all rookies in baseball, batting average on base up there in OPS as well. But I'm curious, so you have a good problem on your hands. Corey Dickerson will be back probably, in the next 10 days, 2 weeks at the most. Then you have five outfielders who are all probably deserving of some playing time. Hopefully everyone stays healthy until then. But these kind of situations, what do you try to do with the younger player like Reynolds when you have some veterans that are performing well?
Well, given that we currently have 12 guys in the injured list and 22 different players have hit the injured list for us this year, that's a long time away, Joe. It's probably not even really worth the conversation. Brian's been outstanding. Melky's been tremendous. And again, as a result, as we talked earlier in the show, we have the ability to be patient with Corey Dickerson, let him get at bats, let him feel like he's locked in, because the player he's replacing has been really good, and we need Corey to be really good. We need that 300 batting average with the power, with the Gold Glove defense. That will be an asset for us if he's Corey Dickerson again. So we have the ability to be patient. The general answer to the young player and role, young players need to continue to play. And with Melky Cabrera, with Corey Dickerson, with Gregory Polanco and Starling Marte, theoretically, if everybody stays healthy, which is a huge question mark at this point in time, given the way this year has gone, there wouldn't seem to be playing time. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But just are thrilled with what Melky and Brian have done. And Brian just doesn't seem fazed by anything.
Yeah.
We love that Vanderbilt program, Coach Corbin. The development of the young men as well as the players is in our minds the best in the industry, and Brian Reynolds is an example of that.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch, that's for sure. Lonnie Chisenhall, is he anywhere close right now? We have not seen him play a regular season game yet.
Yeah, we moved Lonnie to the 60-day because we needed the roster spot, and he's technically eligible early this week, so it was purely a paper move. Lonnie has had continued calf soreness, he's going to take some time here.
Okay. Also, Jordan Lyles, got to talk about him too. Is anything surprising you, or is this I'm not talking about sheer results, but just, you know, the execution of pitches, the sequencing, the things that you were talking about over the winter that interested the Pirates in Jordan Lyles. Is he basically doing what you guys thought he'd be doing?
What's great is Jordan has multiple weapons, but he has two that play really well. And that's the fastball, the four-seam at the top of the zone that rides and takes off, and then the curveball, which is a power breaking ball. And he's committed to those two. Now he has the sinker, he has the cutter, he has the changeup, cutter / slider that go with it. So when hitters start to cheat against him, he can blend those pitches in. But he's become a two-pitch dominant starter, and he's played to his strengths. And so his willingness to sell out to that, his willingness to commit to that, and we made it very clear that this job is yours to keep, and we believe you will keep it and have a ton of success if you sell out to those two pitches and use the other situationally, and he's done that. And his willingness to do that as a young man with 6-7 plus years in the big leagues over time, is a credit to him and a credit to his conviction. And the Brewers helped him turn a corner last year. He had started to kind of turn a corner with San Diego. So that's always good to see a pitcher commit to their strengths, and he's being rewarded for it, and has pitched very well.
Kevin Newman is hitting .356. He is making his way back into the starting lineup more regularly. Is this the Kevin Newman that we were promised, I guess, so to speak? I mean, you know what I mean? Because last year, his physical nature, he had lost some weight, and he was slapping the ball around and still even wasn't that successful. Started off this year, got hurt. But now since he's come back and is healthy and has had that strength on him, he looks a lot like a first-round pick should at the plate and in the field, too, for that matter.
Yeah, we are all guilty of recency bias, and we are all guilty of confirmation bias. And what recency bias is, we believe what we just saw is what we're going to continue to see in the future, and that is not always the case, especially with young players. We're also guilty of confirmation bias, which means we have a perspective, and we only see the things that confirm that perspective. And I think a lot of people, myself included, have been guilty of recency bias and confirmation bias with Kevin Newman. And we talked all a long time this spring, this past offseason, as we were talking about our conviction in these young shortstops, that Kevin Newman was not the player that we saw up here in September, that he was physically weak, he was chasing, he knew that he had an opportunity to win a job, he was pressing, and he just physically was not in a good spot. Came into spring training back to the weight that he was before, but stronger, and in as these young men continue to grow and develop, he took huge steps forward, and we're seeing it in the bat. The ability to hit a ball over the center fielder's head, the ability to hit a ball into the seats, the ability to drive a ball into the gaps. You see the confidence playing on defense. He knows he's a good shortstop, and it has. It's been fun to watch play out, and we've been talking all the time about the excitement we have about Cole Tucker and Kevin Newman, and we don't want to forget about Eric Gonzalez because he's still a really good defensive player that's coming back. But between the three of them, we felt like we have a really good set of options at shortstop, not only for this year, but for years to come.
And we got a little over a minute left. I wanted to ask you about the first-year player draft. It starts in a little over a week. When do the preparations commence? Do you have a command center down in Brainerd? Give us a brief feel of what those few days are like.
Yeah, the real preparation began the day after the 2018 draft ended, and actually even before then, because we were looking at freshmen in college, sophomores in college. We're seeing sophomores in high school and juniors in high school before. Last week we were down in Florida. Everybody, all the area scouts came in. They went through their regions. They presented to our national group as well as our leadership group. This week we're headed back down there on Sunday, today actually, tomorrow. Half the group heads in today, half the group heads in tomorrow morning. And that's when we really begin to put the board together and to identify our targets, to identify guys we want to work through some scenarios with and put ourselves in a position to have the best 40 rounds of drafts. And we've got two additional picks this year that we possibly can. Joe Delacari and his staff just do an amazing job, and I'm so grateful and so proud that to be their GM.
Sounds fun, sounds crazy. Neil Huntington, always thanks. We got the Pirates and the Dodgers coming up in just a little bit. Baseball here on the Pirates Baseball Network.